Yo. Hey guys, welcome back to another awesome edition of the Best Practices Show. Have you ever thought to yourself, what metrics should I be watching? Well, some of them you're watching and they're not helping you very much, like gross production. And today, our CEO, the integrator, the brilliant man behind the scenes here at ACT Dental walks us through why gross production could be and is the worst metric of all time for dentists to really understand your practice's story. So we'll explain in the podcast, but gross production often doesn't tell us the whole story. We're going to go into a deep dive of the metrics that really matter and why you need to know these numbers and how you can simplify the future of your practice and just enjoy going to work. So please listen up. I hope you guys enjoy it, and we'll see you soon. Hey guys, welcome back to the Best Practices Show podcast. We're introducing a brand new segment. It's called Metric Monday. Today we're going to be talking about why gross production is the worst business metric of all time. And you have to understand the story behind it with our CEO, Dr. Barrett Straub. Thanks for being on, brother. Appreciate you.
Hey, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah.
It's a great topic. And I think we're going to tell a nice story for a lot of people to understand gross production in a different way.
Yeah, we might get a little salty too on this whole gross production thing. And so if you're listening to us, hang on tight, because hopefully, like all of our podcasts, you get a little bit of insight on how this all works. Now, just to give you a little heads up, we're practice coaches. This is what we do. We look at this stuff all day long from great practices all over the country. So we're not here just as a ploy for you to follow our, you know, slant on things. This is what we do. And there's inherent challenges with it. So give us a little background, Barrett. You know, where are we going with this today?
All right. Well, we're going to talk about, there's a story in production. And in dentistry, we are way too focused on gross production. Gross production. And what we're finding as we coach our financial gaps. So our financial gaps model, those of you familiar, we're going to spend our time today in the top gap, which we call the effort gap. And there's a lot of data and there's a story to be told in this effort gap about production. And so we're going to walk through this story and kind of share how, let's say there's two $1 million producing practices. They may not be the same. They could be very, very different. And there's a story to tell in how you get to that production. So gross production is a very, very poor metric unless you know the values of some other metrics that help tell the story. How did you get to that gross production? And we're going to walk through that today.
Yeah. And so a couple other things to pay attention to is if you look at any of the Health Policy Institute data that's coming out from the ADA, dentists are making less year over year. And they're working harder than ever, and they're spending more days doing that. And while we love the ADA, one piece of it does not point out the magic impact or the horrible impact of write-offs, which will add some perspective to that. So describe the effort gap. Like, let's walk through that. Where do we start?
Yeah, the effort gap is the top of our financial gap model. So we start with gross production. We subtract from gross production any adjustments. Sometimes we call them write-offs. And we're left with net production, and that is your collectible amount. So I like to start, before we dig in, I want us to just define gross production. And so gross production, I'll say this. Many, many dentists out there in the U.S. are underreporting their gross production. In fact, they don't know what their gross production is. And that seems like a weird, bold claim, but explain that, Kirk. How should dentists be calculating their true gross production?
Yeah. So number one, they're not putting in their full master fee. Now, inherently, there's challenges with your gross production because some of you aren't recording any production at all. Your sister came in. This is my favorite one. Your sister came in and you prepped the whole upper arch, but you didn't put anything in the computer. So that's one challenge. And then having dentists decipher the code of like, master fee schedule, their UCR fee schedule. And so they've got a mishmash of things going on in there. So when we pull the data out, they don't say garbage in, garbage out. It's like garbage in gets messier inside there. So it's really hard for a lot of our doctors to figure out exactly what their gross production is, don't you think?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we have to report our true master gross production, even if we're going to adjust or write off some of that. We have to report it correctly. We want to know what it actually is because that's our output.
Right.
And so our output is our true production of our business. If we were a widget manufacturer, we would actually want to know how many widgets did our manufacturing plant produce, regardless of how many of those we were able to sell and how much we were able to sell them for. We need to know the output. Why? Because our output in our dental practice costs money, it costs time, it costs energy. And so we need to know, since our overhead is calculated as a function of our collections, but we spend that money on our production, we need to know our output. So even if we're going to adjust some off, and we don't really want to see that adjustment because it doesn't make us feel good, we still need to know it and record it. So we can know, am I a $1.5 million practice that has a net production of $1 million and can collect on $1 million? Or am I a $1.1 million practice that has a write-off of only $100,000 and I still collect on $1 million? So you can have net production practices of DECO with very different types of practices to get there. So the gross production, while we say it's one of the worst metrics, it is because of how most people track them, and we need to know it the right way.
Yeah, and a lot of times, if you're a dentist, you know how this works. You just met with your accountant a couple months ago, and they're like, you're doing great, because at the bottom of my P&L statement, it says my income went up $30,000. But what it doesn't show on your P&L is the fact that you probably worked 10 days more, and your gross production went up $200,000. And that's where all of our brain and our energy is. And so I like this. This gap is very well titled, the effort gap, because it goes, you can go in a lot of different directions in how hard dentists are working. Let me add one more thing. Dentists now, according to the ADA, if you work an 8-hour day, are working on average, if you're a solo GP, 220 days a year. And that's at an all-time high. So knowing your effort gap of what you give in order to what you get, the output, is critical to your starting point here.
Absolutely. And so, you know, to wrap up on this first introductory point is that gross production, and you are going to, in this gap will live your PPO adjustments, your contractually obligated PPO adjustments, your elective write-offs or adjustments, your guaranteed services, your charitable care to your family and friends like Kirk talked about, that will also be in this effort gap, and your membership plan adjustments or discounts will live in here as well. And so some of these adjustments and write-offs are good. We love charitable giving. We love membership plans. Our friends at Clear do a great job. But we still got to record them properly. So now you can see with those adjustments, with those write-offs, there's a gap between your true output, your gross production, and your net production, which is your collectible amount. And we call it effort because it takes a lot of effort to produce your dentistry. Let me report it this way. If a crown appointment fails and doesn't show, while you have some fixed costs that remain, some of your variable costs just went away. Your lab costs, your material costs, and we never want, you know, the crown appointment to fail, for instance. But if you do that crown and then you have to write off a chunk of it, those fixed and variable costs were already spent, but you can only collect on your net production. So sometimes we need to just account for that and know what our profit margin is. And therefore, we need to report our true gross production before the rest of these numbers that we're about to go into are going to make a lot more sense.
Yeah. One more thing we'll just add on this is you can't really limit yourself to how many adjustment types you're going to put in as many as you possibly can, because if your team members aren't trained really well, they're just dumping everything into one big bucket or three big buckets, especially if you're participating with multiple insurances. You need to be able to analyze each one of these as a, you know, how are we spending our time? And what's going on here? The more data, the better, because with data, there's no emotion. We can decide, okay, we're not going to do that anymore. Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And for those of you that are kind of new to this concept and hearing us talk about this for the first time, let me simplify it. You have a fee. You have one master fee. You have to look at yourself and say, this is 100% of my, we'll just use crown fee. Am I going to get 100% of that? Well, if you're in a PPO, no. Okay, so what's the amount off of your fee that you're adjusting off? And you make a category for write-off called XYZ insurance, and you just categorize it. If you give 10% away to Mary Sue because she's elderly and in a tough spot in life, great, do that. Call it charity. If you do veneers for your sister, great, do it. Call it family and friends discount. So just literally, why am I not getting 100% of my true fee? Write it off and categorize it and just have the knowledge of doing that. So now, you know, what kind of, Kirk, talk about the effort gaps that we're seeing. I mean, we run the gaps with all our clients on a daily basis, hundreds of clients. So we get to see a very good average practice throughout the nation. What are we seeing in terms of effort gaps?
Yeah, so the effort gap before the pandemic, it wasn't, you know, it was pretty normal to see a great practice writing off 25 or maybe even 30%. And we even thought that was really high. Now we're seeing it in the 30 to 40% range, and the national averages are falling into the 42, 43%. And recently, in some of the experts we've interviewed on the podcast, there are a few dentists out there that are writing off as much as 55%, which makes no sense at all. Now, if you're north of the 30, let's just take 33%. That means in a real simple analysis, you're working one out of every 3 days for free. Or better yet, let me put it this way. You don't collect a dollar until April 1st. You're just going to work for 3 months without collecting a dollar. You know, we're not even speaking to profitability. So while that might be harsh to hear, what we want to do is just wake you up to, you know, how this impacts your practice. So what else do we need to know about those ranges?
Well, you know, people always ask me, like, how can I tell how much I'm writing off? Well, one, just very generally, if you're in a quote unquote, a bunch of PPOs, you're probably in at least the 30 to 40% range. Mm-hmm. If you have just a few of the big ones, you're probably in anywhere from 20 to 35%. If you just have like one left, you're probably 15 to 25%. And our most successful fee-for-service practices can get it under 10. We're usually living in the 5 to 10% range because they have enough elective and charitable giving. Ultimately, it depends on how many of your patients pay 100% of your fee versus are in the PPOs or those other patient segments. So another way to look at this, if you run an adjustment report and you have and you get a number like 15, 20%, don't trust it because you have to make sure that your team is billing out the true fee. So if you, and here's where this issue comes to lie, is a lot there's a lot of people coaching out there to bill the UCR or the contracted fee of a PPO. Now, why? One, because yes, it might make life a little bit easier for your admin team, but two, they also don't want you seeing how much you write off.
Right.
So what is happening is people are like, I'm only writing off 18%. Well, actually it's 40. But if your team puts the contracted fee as the top of the ledger when they bill out, of course, you're not going to be able to calculate that write-off. So there's a little bit of work and investigation, and it's pretty easy once you understand this concept, and that's why we're doing this podcast today. But everyone knows their MOD resin fee. So go into your ledger, the last 10 patients that you did an MOD, and just look at the top line. Is it that fee that you think you charge for an MOD, or is it a varying fee based on the type of insurance or the PPO contract that that patient is contracted with? And if it's not your 100% fee, then your adjustments will be grossly underreported right. in your software.
Yeah, and there's 100 reasons to do this. One of them is you may not be participating with all these PPOs in the future. At least we hope you aren't, which means your patients need to be seeing the full fee all the time so that when you do charge your full fee, they're not shocked to say, wow, you doubled your fee. You dropped my insurance and then you doubled your fee. What? So you could get another boat. You want to make sure that your team members have that confidence to say, this is our full fee. This is our master full fee. And it is going to stress you out. But you have to let that work positively for you, because when you start watching those discrepancies, you'll go, I work too hard for this. And that's a big piece of it. So what else would you say before we go on to the next metric, Barry?
Yeah, one last thought before we get on to annual patient value. But here's a scenario we see all the time. Practice is busy, has some PPOs, and they're busy. Capacity is near 100%, booking out hygiene 8 months, booking out new patients 6, 7, 8, 9 weeks. Like, we're busy. And we don't feel the profit, and so we want to, quote-unquote, produce more. And likewise, because of this effort gap they have, the overhead is too high. So team, we've got to produce $100,000 more, and we've got to restrict and cut our overhead. Well, how are we going to do that? If our chairs are already full, the only way to produce more is to do more per hour, but often it's work longer, work harder, add a hygienist, et cetera. What does that stuff do? It takes more materials, more salary, more overhead.
Right.
So my point is, when we spend for a production and we have a big gap between that production and what we actually collect, our overhead, one, will always be out of whack, and two, we'll never be able to reduce that overhead until we affect our profit margin or reduce or manage this effort gap. So a lot of this is going to make sense. So this is why if someone just says, my gross production is X, and they don't have these numbers that we're going to talk about here, we don't have the story, neither nor do they, to make business decisions, to make spending decisions. So one of the very first metrics that are going to tell this production story is annual patient value. And APV just starts the story so well. And let me phrase it this way. Annual patient value is of all your collections last year divided by your active patients. An active patient is a visit within 18 months. And what is this telling? It's telling a story. Do you do a lot of production on a little bit of patients, or a little bit of dentistry on a lot of patients? So it's a high volume, low volume game. To get to that $1 million, how many patients did you need to see to get there?
Sure. Right. Yeah, so this is where you can start to do the math game. And our coaches often joke, they're like, just let me look at annual patient value. I'll see how good this dentist really is. Because if you're looking at an annual patient value somewhere in the 300s, you're like, oh my goodness. Number one, that's a little bit of a limiting mindset. First of all, they're probably not even charging what they're worth. They're not creating a lot of value. But when you find a dentist that's north of 1,000, you can see that they're creating a lot of value. And really, let me just say, there's 331 million people in the United States. Do you want them all to be your patients? Hell no. You only need 1,200 or 1,300 patients if you're a well-meaning dentist, if you know how to handle APV. I was out in Scottsdale, Arizona, and an awesome female dentist was like, no, I don't even want that many. I do 900 patients. And she told me what she produced, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is somebody who gets it. She's created a patient base of people that want to pay her full fee, value her services, and they refer other people to go, I know, I got to pay the full fee. So what we're hoping you can see in this is that the APV really does indicate whether or not you're moving in the right direction or not.
Right. And you think about it. Let's say we have these two hypothetical $1 million producing practices. One is 3,000 active patients for a single doc. That's like $333 per patient. Right. The other has 1,000, right? So that's $1,000 per patient. While they both got to $1 million, one is the energy and effort and blood, sweat, and tears to produce that million is way different than the other, right? So we can see how gross production, $1 million. Well, we're going to tell two very different stories. One had to see a lot of patients and do $333 only per patient. And one saw one third of the patients at $1,000 a head to get to the million. Both got to a million. One gave a lot more of energy.
Right. And you can only imagine what you're doing with 3,000 patients, what time of day you're seeing them, what days you're seeing them. And so these are other questions. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Well, what Barrett's saying is absolutely true, is once you get locked in on what this data means, you can actually start to use it to navigate a better road ahead. So walk me through this. Like, where do I go with this?
So next, we're APV or annual patient value, and closely related that is active patients. I often say we can start with our active patients. Tell me how many active patients per full-time dentist does your practice have, and I pretty much can tell you what your days are like. Right. And there's a big difference between 1,200 per doctor and 2,900 per doctor.
Yeah. And then we're going to talk about capacity a little bit, but for the most part, and I'm going to greatly generalize here, if you have a full-time hygienist working 4 days a week, about 750 patients is about what they're going to see if they're seeing them twice a year. Now, that's very general. And if you have two hygienists and you're a doc, you can take these and you can extrapolate a little bit. Now, we're going to go a little bit deeper into the science of this, but you don't need every patient. You just need the right ones for your practice, and you can build an amazing dental practice that you feel very equitable with.
Right. So we coach dentists to move towards the fee-for-service model, if not all the way, a lot. We want people to, if they want, to move on that spectrum from a high volume, low margin to the fee-for-service model, which is, you know, low volume, high margin. One of the first ways to tell, can I do it, is APV. And so if you're at 300, yes, we can coach you there. Don't pull the trigger yet. Let's move that number up to 400, 500. We want you know, low volume usually is of north of $1,000. High volume practices are living below 700, 300, 400, 500. I want to see, and I want the dentist to prove themselves. I have the skills to diagnose, present, and sell comprehensive care and get that APV number at least to 500, 600, 700. And when you can do that, like, yeah, this is going to work. Let's go. So APV is a really good one that tells a story. We talked about active patients, but let's go to our favorite, Kirk.
Right.
Days worked times production per day. Explain that. This is it. Okay. This is the one pearl that everyone should get.
Oh, it should. And we're going to do exactly, because there's the best two KPIs around production. We're going to go into that. But I just want to make sure we put a bow on this. This is why when we said gross production is the worst number, you guys, this is why gross production is the worst number. People go, why gross produce 2.3 million? Well, you wrote off a million of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, who cares?
And you work 232 days and you're miserable. Yeah.
And you don't have any money.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And your only game is more, more, more. So now we're going to, so I'm hoping you're hearing this lightheartedly, but it's not, it's serious, but also, you know, we're going to do this days worked times production per day. Now walk us through this. If nothing else, just track these two. Walk us through this, Barrett. How does that work?
It's so simple. And it's so nice to, this equation is for planning your future.
Right.
Days worked times production per day. Your gross production is nothing more than how many days was your business open times how much did you produce per day. That equals your gross production. I know it's easy math, but when we simplify it and we really think about it now, when we know those two numbers, now we can plan for the future. I was open 200 days last year. I want to be open 190 days. Therefore, I need to produce X amount per day to reach my production goals. Is that doable? Right? That's like the number one question we start our clients on goal setting is days worked times production per day. Now, days worked is literally days worked. It's how many days was your business open? Now, I know Mondays and Wednesdays and Thursdays and Tuesdays all look a little different in terms of doctors and hygienists. It all evens out over time. How many days were the doors open to have butts and chairs times production per day?
Okay, Barrett, but, you know, I'm open 4 days a week, but I go Fridays and do my big cases. Do those count?
Yes.
Yes, they do. If you go to the office and you're doing dentistry, that is a day's work. People are like, oh, I don't count that. Well, you should count that. And so let me go back to what Barrett said that's really important. Time is the new rich. And so number of days work, don't take that lightly. I am shocked by the number of dentists that actually don't know the number of days that they worked. And so if you're at 220, it's good to know that number, but don't stay there. The true mark of a master who understands this says, you know, I was at 210 and now I'm down to 190 and my kids are getting older and I'm going to go to 185 next year. Then I'm going to go to 175. Then I'm going to go to 165 and yet still make more in this whole process. That's how you can use these to create a better practice and a better life. Now, You talk about days worked times, you know, production per day. Go a little bit deeper on that. So how do I better use this information as we keep looking into this?
Well, I also want to think, since we are, you know, our mission is this better practice, better life. We can get to $1 million in 180 days, or we can get to $1 million in 220 days. 220 right. days is the average for general dentists through the ADA. That's too many days, in our opinion. So that's 40 days off, both getting to $1 million. Which one, according to our definition, because time is the new rich, time with your family, which one has a better practice, better life? The one that can get to $1 million with less days. So the question is, how many days did it take me to get to my gross production? Okay, and why? Because that's energy. We're in this effort gap. How much blood, sweat, and tears, and stress, and anxiety did I have to give of myself to get to my gross production? And am I good with that? Or do I need to improve that so I can get to my same production or more with less energy and effort? Work smarter, not harder. And unless we tell this story, we're always just going to default to work more, harder. And so that's why days work times production per day is like the basis of our GAPS goal setter calculator for planning for the future. And just like Kirk said, we have dentists that use our GAPS for early on, get out of financial straits. We have dentists in the heart of their career saying, I got to maximize my profitability during the money earning years. And then the most fun is when we have the dentist say, how few days can I work and still make what I need to make? Yeah. And sometimes we see them working 120 days. You know, it's amazing when you use this equation.
Yeah, absolutely. And two, I like to always tell the story bigger than, this is why Barrett's the smart one. He's very much locked in on the details that matter. And you're going to see, number one, these are not the data points that are readily available if you use EagleSoft or Open Dental or Dentrix. They're not telling you, hey, wait, hold on. PPD's not right or active patient. A lot of them are just all about gross production and numbers that are important to look at, but they don't offer a better practice and a better life. And the other thing I'll say is that if you're the practice that takes 220 days to do $1 million, you're probably doing it with a bigger team because you've got somebody that works for the insurance company that you pay their salary, but they sit at the front desk and you're just trying to keep that hygiene schedule open. So there is a huge quality of life issue here. And while this might sound like a lot of work, it's really not. You know, if you just look at the data, it's amazing what the data will tell you that you could look at this data after 6 months and go, well, that's dumb. Why am I doing that? And I go, I don't know. It's your practice. The challenge is we're trying to distill this and make it as simple as possible so that dentists can understand this. What else do we need to know about this, Barrett?
Right. So we got production per day. Now let's go deeper. So we go to production per hour, production per visit. So again, if you really want to get down to the nitty gritty, we always say a starting point is 70% restorative, 30% hygiene in terms of production. So you can start there and work down. So production per hour, I like production per hour a little better than production per visit, just because I can, as a dentist, wrap my brain around hours versus a visit. So they're two different ways. So production per hour is a retrospective KPI. So you know your production, but the hours are the hours available to a patient, not your hours worked. So if you work 9 hours, but 8 of those are clinically available hours, then you do the math for 8. So it's a retrospective. What I mean is, after the week is done or the day is done, you say, I produced X. Now how many hours were available to have a butt in the chair, and you do the math there. So production per hour, again, if we want to increase our gross production, if we want to increase our production per day, one of the very tangible ways we can wrap our head in is, okay, every hour I got to do more. And that relays itself to more comprehensive dentistry, quadrant dentistry, doing more dentistry on less patients. Once I have a butt in the chair, I'm going to do as much as possible. And that just makes life easier. Now, production per visit is very similar, but they tell a slightly different story. I like to say production per visit is potential. So a visit, now the challenge with production per visit, it's every visit. An exam is the same as a full arch, and that's where it's a little less helpful. However, if your PPV goes up, everything else goes up. PPH goes up, PPD goes up, gross production goes up. It's great. Now, what PPV is a potential, especially if we're looking at hygiene, especially if you have hour long hygiene visits. PPV is like when there's a butt in the chair, he or she's going to produce X.
Right.
But if there's only 6 out of 8 hours with a butt in the chair, the PPH or production per hour is down. So you can use them diagnostically as to off one another to diagnose what is my issue. And we're going to get to it. It's usually capacity. So capacity is of those 8 hours, how many butts were in the chair? That's when it's retrospective. They were full at the start of the day. What actually happened? Well, one no showed, one canceled, 6 out of 8. That's different than 100% 8 out of 8. So we have to do that calculation.
Yeah, and so we define capacity differently than the industry does.
Yes.
People say increase your capacity, which means for most people, increasing your capacity is increasing your hours or increasing your chairs. That is not good capacity. Point. And increasing your hours is not increasing capacity. It's increasing your hours. Increasing your chairs is not increasing capacity. It's just increasing the number of your chairs. Capacity is using what you have. So of the 100, how much did I use? That is your capacity. And so what we really recommend is that capacity has to be at its highest level. And if you expand, you can, but it's from a position of strength. What a lot of people do is they have hygienists that are under capacity or doctors, and they add more chairs thinking, well, that's more capacity because it adds more patients and it becomes more of a problem. Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. So, and that's why understanding that capacity, you're right, of my available chairs, what percentage of the time are they filled? That is such a very crucial number to know when you think about PPD, PPH, PPV, because we need to know. Quite often, the number one thing to do is just fill the chair time you already have. Even if it's 85% to 95%, that's a lot of production and revenue just by filling the chair time that we have.
Yeah. One of the easiest things you can do, we'll make this simple for you, is just have a capacity tracker for every producer in the office. It's real simple. It's, you know, it's the days that are listed all along the left. And then you can just keep track of like how many hours, how many patients, and make sure, and they only turn it in once a month. It's a piece of paper that your hygienist turns in at the end of the month, or your associate turns in, and you turn in at the end of the month. And you want to make sure you're north of 92, somewhere in a 95% range. And if you have a hygienist that's at 78%, don't make them feel bad. Just say, hey, listen, we got to improve that. So you go from 78% to 85%, then to 92%, and you could do collective best practices. So you have one hygienist who's 92%, you got another one at 78%. Have them be working together about how do you do this? Because you're going to see a noticeable difference in verbal skills, confidence, how they keep them in the chair, all that kind of stuff. And when you start to have your capacity go higher, you're going to get to a point where your hygienists, let's just use hygienists, they're going to come to you and go, doc, stop scheduling these people. I have nowhere to put these patients. And that's a good problem to have, because now you can move on to the next thing, which is for another podcast, patient selection. So it's good stuff.
Absolutely. And so, Kirk, you know, one of my pet peeves is missions is always send people with like implementable actions. So if you're listening and you're like, I want to do some of this, hit pause real quick. And what I'm going to do now is number one, you're going to determine your gross production. And even before that, you're going to determine, is my team billing my master fee or the UCR? That's number one. Number two, annual patient value. How many active patients do you have divided by your collections in that same time period? Then days worked times production per day. Then production per hour, production per visit, but most importantly, capacity. And don't think more than just draw these numbers and write them on a piece of paper, and they're going to tell you a story, and you're going to be able to determine where there's a gap, where there's an issue, where you should spend your time and energy. That might be on write-offs. I'm writing off too much. I need to reduce that. That might be on, I need to do more production per patient. I don't need to get any more patients. I got to just do more on the ones I have. It might be, I need to fill our chairs a little more. I thought we were at 95. We're actually at 82. And so just pull the numbers, put them on a piece of paper, read them and analyze them, and you'll know what the next step is to do. But why should we do? I mean, what's the purpose of this, Kirk, altogether? And the gaps we're finding is we want better practice, better life. We want dentists to manage and control both their production and their energy and their effort. And, and what does that do for them?
Well, first of all, you need the energy and the time left after you go to work. The biggest problem in the world is not the fact that PPOs are ruining it. It's the fact that we don't give our best energy in things that matter most. You're spent when you don't know these numbers. When you're chasing gross production and you're going to courses, sitting next to another dentist who doesn't know anything either, and they're like, yeah, I'd produce $4 million. My first thought is that sounds terrible. You know what I mean? Like, who cares what you produce? What did you keep and how hard did you work? And in no time, if you're a young dentist listening to this, you got to be careful because you're going to blink and you're going to be me. You're going to be 53 going, where the hell did all that time go? So we want you to have the right energy for your family, your friends, your hobbies, and all that kind of stuff. So knowing these numbers, you can make it really simple. You can put it on a Google sheet and you can create what are called countermeasures. So when it's not adding up, you can go, okay, this number isn't great. And then you come up with a plan to make it great. And if you're struggling with this, you can do something like get a coach who does this all day long and helps dentists get days back. So that's really, really important. What are your take-home messages on this, Barrett?
You know, my take-home message is that the majority of dentists, and I did this for much of my career, their annual goal setting sounds like, I think we should do 10% more. Let's do 10%. Let's produce 10% more. And they never ask themselves why. And I will encourage and challenge all of us that want to produce more in gross production to be able to explain the why using these numbers that we just went through today. And often you don't need to produce more. You need to maximize your profit margin. But if you do, you're going to be able to explain and support your decision based on PPD, days worked, PPH, capacity. Be able to tell the story of production so that when you say, boy, if we could do 80,000 more, you can prove it that extended effort and energy is going to result in profitability. Or maybe it won't even require any extra effort because it's just working smarter, not harder. So my point is that we always default on do more, do more, do more. And I'm going to ask, well, why? Why do you need to do more? And be able to be a business owner and support that goal with some data.
Yeah, because dentistry, if the better you get, the more you care about your margins, translucency, occlusion, all those kinds of things. And this is a sport. You just can't keep giving more and more blood for this. So you got to figure out how much more really, and it's an equation. It's really a mathematical equation. How many days do I want to work? All these numbers that we've talked about already, and it's quite predictable. A lot of you are really mad that all of these, you know, big conglomerates have descended down on dentistry and they're buying up dental practices. Well, I'm here to tell you, it's wildly predictable. This is one of the most profitable businesses in the world. And if you're a practice owner, you went into this business for one reason. You love taking care of people and you loved freedom. You loved the freedom of choice. You loved the freedom of working how you wanted to work. And you can reclaim all of that freedom when you just know these numbers. And all we want at the end of the day is for you to go to work and go, I love how I do it. And that's pretty darn cool when you know these numbers. So, Barrett, any last thoughts?
No, I love the idea of better practice, better life, because we're literally using these numbers to plan a better life.
Right.
Through a better practice versus just reacting to what's left over at the end of the day or end of the week or end of the month and giving that to our life. We can literally plan a great life via business metrics, business strategies, and just knowing what it takes to do our production and what we're taking from our life in order to earn that net production.
Yeah. So thank you so much, brother. We're going to have so many more helpful podcasts and things that we really want to bring so that you can just create a better practice and better life. And I'll just say this, if you're listening and you're struggling with this, don't struggle. Like, reach out to us, send us an email. We're happy to send you our capacity tracker. We're happy to walk you through the gaps. We're happy to help you see how your practice can be better. The worst thing to do is talk to yourself. So you're going to see we've got some great resources, the Best Practices Association. We're going to encourage you. It's an incredible community with great content and a lot of the things that we mentioned where you can study on your own. Then we also have a middle tier product, which is our study club, where you can be around other dentists that are doing this work. It's called the To the Top Study Club. You can join us for free if you want. We believe in it so much, you can come for free, no charge, be our guest. And if you hate it, you don't need to stay. And then lastly, for the serious students who really want to do this, we can put an expert coach in your office, assigned to your team, assigned to you more than anything, keep you accountable, make sure you know what you're doing. So at the end of the day, you love this thing called dentistry and you enjoy going to work. So I hope you guys enjoy today. Keep sending us suggestions for things you guys want to see. If you have questions, feel free to reach out to us. We're here to help you. So until we see you guys next time, or you hear from us next time, keep watching or keep listening to the Best Practices Show. You guys have a great day. So there you have it. Another great episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Hey, and thank you for showing up. I just want to thank you for being here and sharing the good word with your friends. And if you're really enjoying the podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go to wherever you consume the podcast and just give us a 4 or 5 star review? Here's what that does. It allows us to find other great people like you. I love this profession so much. I'm going to spend the rest of my professional life finding great information so that you can consume it and your friends can consume it so that you can create a better practice and a better life. So keep spreading the word and we will see you guys soon. Have a great day, everybody.